When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben. Welcome to episode 155 of the podcast for August 2nd, 2012. My guest today is Jim Benson. He's the author of the book, Personal Kanban, Mapping Work, Navigating Life. He's the founder of a company with a really great name, Modus Cooperandi. And he's most notably the creator of the Personal Kanban approach for managing work. It's not Kanban as in materials management, if you're thinking just-in-time and tubing Kanban systems for factories or hospitals. But really, it's a way of visualizing work and setting WIP limits or work-in-process limits, much the same way as a Kanban might be used to trigger or limit production in a factory setting. But this is something that's useful for knowledge workers and anybody, really. It's a really interesting approach. If you go to leanblog.org/155, you can see show notes and a link to Jim's website, his personal Kanban 101 site. It's a real nice treat to be able to talk to Jim, as he was commenting before we did the podcast. It's surprising we haven't talked before, but happy to get introduced to Jim. I read his book last year. I need to get started with this personal Kanban philosophy. I know a lot of you listening are already using it, and I know a lot of you are fans of this approach. So I hope you like the conversation. I'm going to get my button gear and start visualizing my work and doing my best to limit WIP so I can get more done, or at least be less stressed and enjoy what I'm doing. So thanks again for listening. You can get all past episodes through leanpodcast.org. Well, again, our guest on the podcast is Jim Benson. Thanks for talking to us today, Jim.
Thank you.
So if you can start off, introduce yourself for the listeners, your professional background, the work that you do.
Okay. Well, my professional background was a bit of an odyssey. I started off in psychology, enjoyed it quite a bit, but it didn't quite resonate with what I wanted to do, how close I wanted to be to, I guess, the action, if you will. So I went into urban planning so I could build cities and things like that. Spent about a decade doing huge multi-million, multi-billion dollar projects, building freeways, light rail systems, massive growth management efforts and things like that. And as I was doing that in the early 90s, the internet came along, and the internet started to change the way that government had to interact with its data and its information. So I became more and more involved in the information side of governance. And in so doing, I became frustrated with some things about government, where it wasn't being very good stewards of its data, and it wasn't very collaborative. So I started a software development company that was just building software for government, custom software, to help them be better stewards of their data and more collaborative. And when I started doing that, I adopted techniques for software development called agile techniques, which were somewhat lean in focus. And in doing that, I had to actually contract with government agencies to make that work. as we went through those, we became more lean, actually, and less agile. And at one point, we found out about Kanban systems, and most importantly, about the visualization techniques in there and the importance of limiting your work in progress. And introducing that into software had immediate effects. That led to another radical transformation in my career where we wrote a couple books, and the next thing we knew, we were going around and talking about Kanban systems and changing the face of software development that way. And in 2008, I opened my current company, which is Modus Cooperandi, and we are just dedicated to knowledge workers and knowledge workers working better through lean and other techniques.
Yeah, that's a great company name. I chuckled the first time I read that, Modus Cooperandi. And we'll certainly delve more into your books and work around Kanban and personal Kanban. I'm curious to chat a little bit first, maybe just touch on lean versus agile. I think we've got a lot of listeners who are from outside of software and manufacturing and healthcare.
Wonderful.
So is agile just a different term for lean? Is it a subset of lean practices? How would you describe the difference or the translation into software, the term?
So lean, you know, if you ask anybody what their definition of lean is, you will get a very different answer from the person before. Some people focus on waste. Some people focus on the humanity and so on and so forth. Agile is a little bit better defined, but is very, it's also, there's the state of mind side and the state of process being side. The history of Agile is this, in the, previous, we'll call it the before times, but before Agile, there were waterfall systems that were used to develop software. So people would show up and they would say, we think that we want this, and in our completely ignorant state, we have developed a spec, and we want you to adhere to this spec and deliver us some software in 6 months. We'll be back in 6 months. You guys have a good time. And then they would leave. They'd come back, and they'd be surprised when what they got wasn't what they wanted, cost twice as much, and actually wasn't complete and was half broken. So Agile came through and said, well, you know, so first it was extreme programming. So a guy named Kent Beck wrote a book called Extreme Programming Explained. And that was kind of what launched the Agile revolution. And Agile was saying a couple of things. One, we don't communicate enough. So we're going to force our clients or our bosses or whomever is providing us this work. We're going to say every 2 weeks, we're going to meet. We're going to have a conversation. We're going to show you working software. We're going to figure out what we're going to do the next 2 weeks. We're going to leave. We're going to do that. And then we're going to come back and we're going to just keep iterating until we're complete. And by doing that, they were limiting their batch sizes and they were keeping the cost of change low. Light years better than the system that came before it. So that was fantastic. So, you know, if anyone who is familiar with lean systems can see some of the lean things that were happening there. The Agile also came with helper apps like retrospectives and daily stand-up meetings, which are like, you know, quality circles and, well, daily stand-up meetings. And so it felt, Agile felt that it was lean, but it wasn't quite getting some of the theory. And so Agile didn't do a very good job of actually limiting work in progress. It was limiting batch sizes, which was fine, but it wasn't limiting work in progress. So that's where a lot of Agile's, in my opinion, anyway, that's where a lot of Agile's failings came from.
Yeah. Sounds like it was off to a good start in terms of smaller batch, faster cycles of iteration instead of just a big chuck it over the wall batch.
Exactly.
I mean, there's parallels there to car product development cycles that have gotten more iterative and collaborative over time. Publishing, though, has not really developed a lot, adopted a lot of that model. It's still more,
yes,
of it's a waterfall approach to producing books, but that's a different rant for a different podcast, I guess. So let you know, bring the topic back to Kanban and personal Kanban. You know, it was interesting to me to see your work, and I'll let you, you know, explain what it's about and the origins here. Somebody let me borrow your book on personal Kanban about a year ago. But, you know, from my perspective, and I think from the listeners, you know, when I started manufacturing, Kanban was either a method for, you know, pulling parts and supplies to an assembly line, or it was a production control system
of, right,
helping trigger, you know, the production of parts that were then, you know, fed to the assembly line. And in healthcare, Kanban is being used quite often now for medical supplies, patient supplies. I posted, there's a great video that a hospital in Pittsburgh put together, mm-hmm, that I shared on the blog recently. The idea of applying Kanban to your own personal professional work, I think, is a fascinating idea. So can tell us about personal Kanban, you know, what it is, and maybe in telling that, what some of the origins are, how it came about.
Well, so back when I was a consulting engineer, let's say that we're redesigning a freeway, and I am the project manager for redesigning that freeway. One of the things that actually led me to quit the profession entirely was that 90% of my work was telling other people what other people were doing. So clients would call up and they'd say, "What's your team doing today?" And I would tell them what everybody's doing today, and that would take maybe an hour and a half. And then I'd hang up the phone, and somebody else would call and ask what we were doing. And then I'd hang up the phone, and someone else would come and call again. And then by that point, half the day had been gone, and I didn't know what anybody was doing right now. So I'd have to get up and walk around the building and ask everybody what they were doing. So no one really knew what was going on. There was this massive game of telephone, which had incredible transaction costs attached to it. And that extended into software. So even when we limited our batch sizes with Agile, people still had to meet every day and tell each other, "This is what I did yesterday. This is what I'm going to do today. And these are some challenges that I'm having. So even though we were able to reduce the transaction costs to that little stand-up meeting, you still had to get together and basically waste your time telling people what everybody should already know. So knowledge work in particular is difficult because we don't have physical artifacts of production. So lawyers, software developers, designers, accountants, you know, most of the people doing most of the work in the American economy today store almost their entire backlog in their heads. And there's too many variables there for you to deal with. So with personal Kanban, what we were hoping to do was two things. One was to visualize that work. So externalize all of that stuff so that you can see it all listed out. You can start to see the relationships. You can understand your prioritization models. You can see risk. You can see flow. You can see bottlenecks. You can understand a variety of things. And the second thing is to actually make an explicit limit on work in progress. So the two rules for personal Kanban are to visualize your work and to limit your work in progress. And then after that, things tend to happen organically. So you know, Lean focuses a lot, or American Lean focuses a lot on waste reduction. Waste reduction tends to happen naturally when any professional sees that something is wrong and they can't ignore that thing that is wrong. So, you know, you talk a lot about how to give workers agency so that they can act. And what I found is that people usually have agency. They just don't have the information that they need to act. So with personal Kanban, when people list all of the stuff that they're working on and all of the stuff that's in their backlog, whether they're an individual or a team, there are other people that they work with can see that they're working on something at a given time, and they can lend assistance when necessary. and it's almost zero transaction cost assistance. You eliminate the need for status meetings. You eliminate the need to come up with long lists of stuff and rewrite your long lists of stuff to do. That's where it's from.
Yeah, and there's an interesting, you raise an interesting point there about the coordination and collaboration aspects. You know, I'm sitting here in a home office, and if I were, as we were talking before the podcast, I think seriously now going to start some personal experiments with the personal Kanban board. But maybe other than my wife seeing that, to know what's coming up in my work, travel, future, things like that, there aren't those same collaboration benefits. So I think, you know, maybe on first impression, people think, oh, this is just a personal productivity way of keeping organized. But it sounds like it's a lot more powerful when you're in a team environment, as you're describing. So if you can kind of elaborate or give an example of mm-hmm. that collaboration aspect, that's really interesting.
Well, the nice thing there is that first for us as individuals, we have we put ourselves under a great deal of stress because we take on a lot of responsibilities from all of the different aspects of our lives. So we don't just go to work. And when we do go to work, we don't just do one thing. So we tend to have multiple projects. We tend to have multiple customers. And we have different, unfortunately, we have different segments of our lives. So we have people tend to think of themselves as like a work segment, a play segment, a family segment, a learning segment, and so forth. When we do that, we tend to prioritize our work based on whatever is the most obvious thing you should be doing. And that's usually based on who's ever yelling the loudest. And that's not a good way to prioritize your work. And so in the back of your head, you know you have all of these other expectations that you're not meeting. And I've found that people make fundamentally different decisions when they visualize the problem versus when they're just intellectualizing the problem or thinking that their brains can actually sort through all of those variables and come up with a reasonable answer. So individually, it's an incredible stress reliever. For teams and for organizations, it's an amazing efficiency and effectiveness engine.
And it seems that, you know, this personal Kanban approach goes beyond other approaches to productivity or organization, of, you know, making to-do lists, or, you know, people might know, I haven't really been a devotee of it. I've read the book, Getting Things Done. Mm-hmm. It seems like one of the key differences is this idea of limiting WIP as opposed to mm-hmm. just visualizing it, whether it's on a board or in an app or on a piece of paper. So can you tell us more about the idea of limiting WIP? I mean, I think people that are busy and high achievers are like, oh, you know, we can do it all. And I can keep many balls in the air, irons in the fire. I'm a good multitasker. Mm-hmm. Talk more about this idea of limiting WIP.
So limiting WIP is like chess or like Go, where it takes you about 2 seconds to describe it. And then after you learn about it, you just keep realizing that it does more and more things and it's much more complex than you ever thought it could be. So when we limit when you're not limiting your WIP and you're not visualizing your work, there is no cost whatsoever to taking on more work, which means that you set yourself up as a limitless reservoir of other people's expectations and your own expectations. And then we're constantly dissatisfied with ourselves because we're not able to get to all of the things that we want to get to. When we limit our work in progress and we start to focus on completion, so we say, I have a work in progress limit of 3. I have 3 things now in my doing column or in some state of action, and I have to finish one of those before I pull the next one. In doing that, we have created an economy where any one of those tasks that we take on is now 1/3 of our entire economic universe. So we're going to be extremely thoughtful about what we pull in next. And we're also going to be more likely to both be able to say no from ourselves to additional work and to have an amazingly eloquent justification for doing so. So before, with no visual control and no WIP limiting, if we said no to something, we felt disappointed in ourselves because we weren't able to help somebody else out. And we seem kind of like a wimp or a whiner because we're not able to do this thing. And whatever the thing is we're saying no to was probably pretty easy to do. So we're evaluating that new work based on whether or not we're capable of doing it at all versus whether or not we have the capacity to get it done. Limiting WIP also, since you're placing a constraint, previously we had a big stagnant pool of stuff and we'd start a bunch of them and some of them maybe we'd complete over time, but by and large we'd leave a lot of things undone. Just like when you have a large stagnant pool of water and you constrain it, it starts to flow. That's exactly what we're doing here.
Now, one other thing I want to talk about while we still have some time here are some of the mechanics of making personal Kanban work. And I'd encourage listeners go to your personalkanban.com website. There's a lot of videos and illustrations of the mechanics. So I don't think we need that detail is already out there for people to go look at. But one thing that's interesting is the idea of the tactile feedback to the brain of the physical action of moving a card. And I'm curious if you can talk about your experiences of that. And I'm also curious, as I'm thinking through using this, you know, I could set up a board in my home office, but I'm more often than not on the road. So shy of, you know, putting a webcam up, to be able to, you know, but then I can't really change the board. You know, there are different ways in software or apps of facilitating this. What are some of your thoughts or experiences, or are there any trade-offs in these different approaches?
So there's several things in there. So the first thing is the most effective system for someone who's starting out, especially, is going to be a physical board with post-it notes where you just write your value stream, whatever that might be, across a whiteboard, you get some columns and you just populate a backlog and you start going. With that, I mean, as you mentioned, you get the kinesthetic or tactile feedback as you're moving things along. That has a direct psychomotor response. So it's writing directly to your brain and saying, ooh, you know, this felt good, that felt good. You get this little dopamine rush for completion. And it sounds silly, but it's real. And, you know, if you can get your dopamine from post-it notes and not from sports drinks, that's probably a good thing. So that, and that's if you can do it. And right now, as I'm sitting here at my desk, I have a personal Kanban that actually is my physical desk. So on the left side of me is my ready. On the base of my laptop is my doing. And my right side is done. And I will do that for quick tactical things throughout the day where I need to keep track of things that I might not actually need to keep for posterity. My business partner, Tony Ann, lives in Washington, D.C., and both of us travel a great deal and usually are not in the same place at the same time. So since coming out with this idea, there are now 26 companies making online personal Kanban tools. And that's just the ones that I've been able to find and count, because people keep saying, did you see this? And I was like, oh my, another one? Really? I should have licensed the term. some of the ones that are most enjoyable to use, Kanbonery, which is a tool out of Poland, very clean, very elegant system. Kanban Flow is a Kanban tool that also mixes another tool called Pomodoro in with it. And Pomodoro basically breaks your work up into 25-minute chunks, which is something that's a little more cognitively pleasing to deal with. And Lean Kit Kanban is kind of an industrial strength one, excellent for knowledge workers as a group. But one quick story that I have is I had a project with the UN in Vietnam, and our goal was to write the human development report for Vietnam. And so I was working with 26 researchers spread throughout the country and a couple outside of the country. And I had them all writing their sections in Google Docs, and we were doing this collaborative writing technique so that subject matter experts in one area were lending their expertise to subject matter experts in another area. So they were all informing other sections of the document. And initially we'd set them up with that system and a Kanban. And the Kanban worked really well for a few weeks. And then they stopped using it. And so we were having a meeting, and I said, I noticed that nobody's updating the Kanban. And they said, well, we don't need to. I said, why not? And they said, because every day when we come in and we open up Google Docs, we can see who was writing since we were last in the system, because the most recent documents would flow to the top. And they said, and those are the ones that we edit. So the Google Docs interface was the Kanban. So the point I want to make here is that we want to visualize our work and we want to limit our work in progress. And the form factor, the design of how we're visualizing the work, is extremely fluid. So while working with a value stream and post-it notes floating across it is a very universal one, there may be other ones out there.
Yeah. So it's, I guess, not so much a matter of the exact way that you're doing it, but more a matter of keeping with those principles of visualizing your work, limiting WIP.
Exactly.
Whatever way you can find to do that, that's
exactly. So that's why when people ask me what is lean, I send them to Deming's System of Profound Knowledge. That's like my first stop for lean.
Yeah. And my ears always perk up to hear somebody else who mentions is familiar with Dr. Deming's work. So maybe again, another discussion for another day. There's so much more we talk about, and hopefully we can do another podcast at some point, Jim. I feel like we kind of just scratched the surface and hopefully introduced people to personal Kanban. I'm going to give this a serious go, and it may give better context to do another discussion down the road. But if listeners have got questions, you can send them to me through the blog. Jim, if they want to reach you, personalkanban.com. And do you want to share, Twitter, other places people can reach you? What's the best way?
Yeah, so I am our founder on Twitter. I'm basically our founder almost everywhere in social media. And the easiest email address for me, I guess, would be jim@moduscooperandi.com, which I know isn't the easiest thing to spell, but it's also reachable through the personalkanban.com website. Other than that, the website's up there. On the website, there's a 101. There's, of course, links to buy the book, but there's also ample information on the website for people who want to get started.
Great. So, info on the book is there. The book is also called Personal Kanban, Mapping Work, Navigating Life. Jim Benson, the author of that book and innovator in this area, thank you for taking time to talk on the podcast.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email mark@leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.